Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Unconquered Podcast here on Seminole Sports Radio. This is your host, Jason Staples, as always, here this time to give an early reaction, not quite instant, but pretty close, to another loss for the 2017 Florida State team. This time, first loss in eight games for Jimbo Fisher against rival Miami. And a loss that really comes at a bad time if you're trying to maintain your stranglehold on the state of Florida and on South Florida recruiting, and you want to continue to represent the idea and be able to sell the idea on the road that you are the premier program in the state of Florida, and that all the hype that surrounded Mark Richt and that new staff down in Miami, don't pay attention to them. You know, they're not going to catch up to what's happening in Tallahassee. Well, it's a little harder to sell that message now, isn't it? A little harder to sell that message. And with this being the third loss, first time since 1976 that Florida State has started a season 1-3. All of the season goals are also now gone. So, no, it is correct that Jimbo Fisher, I'm sure, will remind everyone that this season isn't over. And yes, the season will go on. The season, there are still games to be played. There's still a bowl to be made. All sorts of different stuff. But when it comes to the season goals that you come into with at Florida State, particularly in a year like this one, when you start out at number three in the country, all those season goals are gone. Every one. National title, gone. Playoff, gone. ACC title, gone. State title, gone. Every one of those goals, now gone. So, where does that leave you? The thing that we talked about, that I talked about on a couple of the podcasts last week, is how Florida State has really done poorly on the margins, and how so much of that has affected perception. And this was another game that was on the margins. But the reality is that when you have the roster that Florida State has, and when you're in these situations, well-coached quality teams with the kind of talent Florida State has win on the margins more often than not. They just do, because that's when it comes down to those margins, the team that makes, yes, as I talked about in the last podcast, last year Clemson was the beneficiary of some really, really good breaks, a block below the waist call against Florida State, NC State not being able to hit a 33-yard kick to beat him in Death Valley. Yeah, beneficiaries of some luck, and you need some luck to win titles. But then there's also the fact that the team that is going to take care of the small details is going to be the team that, when it comes down to the little, small, razor-thin margins that are college football, and again, the margins are tiny in college football. The difference between an elite team and a team that goes 8-4 or 7-5 is pretty small. Clemson won the national title last year and was all of 18 points from 7-5. So the margins are infinitesimally small in modern college football. And that's why you've got to be so focused and fixated and obsessive about every little detail, whether it's, you know, the false step that the linebacker takes when he's reading a play, or a false step that a corner takes as he's playing bump and run coverage on a big receiver, and needs to make sure that he closes that out correctly. Just every little piece of technique, every whether you're going to block down correctly on a punt formation, every little detail needs to be right, because if one detail is off on one play, when the margins are so thin as they are in college football, that may cost you. And that's where Florida State sits. This is the third game this season that has gone basically, for all intents and purposes, exactly as the preview podcast that we talked about on this show expected. From what each team did schematically, to what worked, to which team had the edge on offense and defense and all sorts of things, the third game that has gone exactly as projected on this podcast, but the score. Yeah, that little detail, the scoreboard, the only thing that matters, yeah, that part is the part that didn't exactly come out as it should. Florida State dominated this game. Really, for about three quarters of this game, Florida State dominated this game. And you can see it in the stats. Florida State averaged 5.7 yards per play. Miami, 4.6. You see that? The team that averages 5.7 should be the team that wins, generally. But not in this case. And yeah, turnovers were a factor. Florida State forced one interception. And that was a really quality interception, by the way, by Stanford Samuels III, who continues to play really, really well at that cornerback position. And then two interceptions, one of which was especially costly by true freshman James Blackman, who grew up in this game, but we'll talk about that in just a moment. But you look at that, Florida State averaged 4.7 yards per rush, and when you take sack yardage out and you just go to the if you just look at the running back yardage, don't even take sack, don't even worry about quarterback yardage in general, just look at running backs. The running backs averaged 6.8 yards per play per carry. What Miami averaged 2.9 per rush. Couldn't get a thing going on the ground all game. Florida State dominated the line of scrimmage. Florida State offensive line dominated the Miami defensive line in the run game in particular. Florida State's defensive line generally dominated the Miami offensive line. Rozier took a beating, more so than Blackman, that's for sure. And none of it mattered. Because when it came time to actually put the rubber to the road, Florida State's allegedly elite defense with as good a talent as anyone in the country. There's no question about that. When you look at the NFL talent, when you look back in 5 years at the guys playing in the NFL from this defense, from this Florida State defense, people are going to go, how did they lose a game? There's a lot of NFL talent on that defense. A lot more than what was across the field in Miami. But once again, when it came time for that defense to get a key stop in the fourth quarter, they didn't get it done. Not only did they not get it done, but I mentioned that Miami only averaged 4.6 yards per play. This is very true. But they averaged 9.2 yards per play on their last two drives, each of which ended in a touchdown that ultimately won the game. Yeah. I mean, you look at this. Miami did not cross midfield in the first half. That's as good a defensive performance as you can have in the first half. And they didn't get support from the offense. The offense did not do its job when it was in plus territory. But again, you're going to kind of expect that with a true freshman. Made some mistakes, had a few wires crossed here and there, didn't look comfortable, was not seeing the field real well. But still, Miami never crossed midfield in the first half. Shows the kind of talent they have when they play at their best. That's what they get. Even in the third quarter, Miami was able to put a little bit more together. 24 plays for 125 total yards. That's 5.2 yards per play. That's still okay. It's not the best defensive performance, but you can get by with that. But then you get to the fourth quarter. And in the fourth quarter, Miami ran 19 plays for 155 yards, 8.15 yards per play in the fourth quarter against this Florida State defense. So when it really mattered, they didn't come. They once again came up small. And at that point, when that happens over and over and over again, you know, it's one thing to fail on the margins here and there. That happens. But when you fail on the margins, when the pressure's on over and over and over again, at some point, you know, at some point, that is who you are. And right now, that's who Florida State is. That's who they've been. And that's where, you know, you've got to get back to those details. Those details have to be fixed. And it continues to be, I mean, stop Miami on first down. Stop them on second down. They get a big third and long. Due to either a poor blitz that doesn't get home that's telegraphed, or to a player with an eye violation that's inexcusable. Any number of things, but it something happens in each case where you get a bust here, a bust there, and at some point you're looking at it and it's poor tactics, sloppy technique when it counts, and it's the little details. And I'm going to repeat what I said at the end of last week. The scheme is fine. The defensive scheme is fine. From the Eisenhower strategy perspective, the scheme is fine. The scheme is what it is. It's okay. It's basically a Saban-style defense. Scheme is fine. But man, the tactics in key situations, particularly on third and long, third and medium, really suck. The tactics. So the Eisenhower level stuff is fine, but man, they just cannot do the Patton stuff well. This defense is in need of a Patton in that regard. And yeah, when the moment arises, when it's a battlefield moment and you have to improvise, or there has to be, you know, that little attack that's made, they come up small. And they continue to play on their heels, or appear to be playing on their heels when it counts. Even when they're bringing a rush, even when they're bringing the blitz, they appear to be playing on their heels. And what that tells me is that there just is a systemic lack of confidence in that regard that filters down to the players. And they're not playing with that. They're not playing on the edge in that regard in the way that they need to. Now, the other thing that, again, there's a bunch of fans on social media, and I understand the frustration. I understand the people calling for all sorts of heads from Jimbo down, although I think it would be, you know, obviously Jimbo's not going anywhere with the contract he has, and I think it'd be stupid to move on from Jimbo anyway. You're not going to replace Fisher with anybody better than him. I can tell you that right now. Jimbo Fisher is a great coach, and I have every confidence that he'll get the program back on its feet, get things fixed. But I do understand the frustration and wanting to see heads roll and all that. It's not going to happen in season. Now, I've said for a long time, I mean, this goes back quite a while, that we're going to see some changes happen that'll be synced up with the addition of the 10th coach. There were going to be changes that were going to happen in 2016, but as you recall, there was supposed to be an addition of a 10th assistant for the 2017 season, but that got pushed back and all sorts of things changed at that point. But after 2017, there's going to be changes, regardless of what happens the rest of the way. So you don't have to root for Florida State to lose or whatever if you watch anything for the rest of the way. Changes are going to happen. Now, exactly who's on the market, who they can get, what changes happen and all that, some of that may still be determined in that regard. I think there are going to be a couple more changes probably now than there would have been had they, say, won a national title, even though then there still would have been changes. But some in the fan base are, for example, demanding that Charles Kelly be fired immediately and, you know, let anybody else call the defense. But here's the problem. Even if you fired Charles Kelly, and again, Kelly is not the only problem. Now, I've criticized a number of things from Kelly over the years on this podcast, most notably going all the way back to 2014 when I highlighted some slippage in technique, particularly with Florida State's cornerbacks, where they were not, Darby and Williams were not as technically proficient as they had been the year before. And then 2015, the same thing. And then, you know, as many of you longtime listeners will remember the numerous times that I've complained and carped about Florida State's inability to execute a simple banjo coverage switch since 2014. So there've been a number of places where I've criticized specific details that just have been unacceptable in that regard when it comes to Kelly. And I've had my say about, you know, my various things to say about the lack of tactics and all that, the lack of feel in those things. But here's the other issue. Even if you did fire Charles Kelly right now, who are you going to have call the defenses for Florida State? What, do you want Jimbo Fisher to call both offense and defense, or hand off the offense and call the defense? He's not going to call the defense, guys. You want Bill Miller to take over and call the defenses? Really? Brad Lawing? You want him calling defenses? Odell Higgins? You want him calling the defense? Now, that very answer gets to some of the problem on the defensive side. And sometimes it's not one. It's not a matter of a coach being a bad coach, or any coach, say, on the staff being a bad coach. These guys wouldn't be where they are. Well, actually, I stand corrected. There were a couple really bad coaches on the Florida State staff when I played. So yeah, they can get to where they are and still be bad coaches. But Jimbo Fisher is not going to tolerate bad coaches. Now, there are a few coaches on this staff that are not what I would certainly classify as elite. But the bigger issue, I think, in some cases, has to do with the mix that you have on the staff. And do you have guys that can cover some other guys' weaknesses? Do you have a group that can gel together to really make sure that everything is as it should be? And that's something that I don't think has really been the case. And here's the difference. So, as I said, if Charles Kelly doesn't call the defense, who's going to do it? Probably the next best option. He might be a better option for all I know, but probably the next best option is actually a quality control assistant, Addison Lynch, who, from what I've heard behind the scenes, is a really, really good defensive mind. But you think about it. On the 2013 staff, you had three guys who could call a defense. You had actually three guys who had called a defense. You had Sal Sunseri, Charles Kelly, and Jeremy Pruitt. And a lot of people want to talk about Jeremy Pruitt being this genius or whatever. And Pruitt's a really good coordinator. He is. He's an excellent coach. He's also a very good defensive backs coach, as was Mark Stoops. On the Stoops staff, you had Stoops and then DJ Elliott, who then Stoops elevated to his defensive coordinator. Here's the thing, and actually Hudson as well, who had also had some experience calling defenses. Florida State has one guy on their staff who you really want to consider having call a defense. When they had three guys who could do it, they each had a little bit of a different style, had a little bit of different stuff that they could bring to the table. But that is a healthy mix. Now, you don't want it to get to the place where you get so many different opinions at the table that you're going to end up having, you know, dissension on the staff. But you do need more than one person in order for the staff to be able to really do what it needs there. And you don't expect your defensive line coach, for example, to be the one to call defenses. You know, Kuligowski at Miami is not going to call defenses. Odell Higgins is not going to call defenses. Generally, the coordinator guy who's going to call defenses is going to come from the back seven, linebackers or secondary, because you have to work back end to forward. Defensively in today's game. But Florida State, you know, if you get rid of Kelly, who do they have to call to really be a defensive mind? So that's another issue here, just in terms of the makeup of the staff in that regard. And yeah, they've got some good quality control help, and Fisher is also a really good defensive mind to help in some of those meetings. But when it comes to making some of these tactical decisions in game, that's where I think the lack is. I think that's where one of the things that has been a problem comes in. Now, just getting back to the game, I know a lot of fans, media, are highlighting that last defensive play call, saying, why in the world would you have one-on-one coverage there? You know, you can't give up that touchdown. Yeah, you can't give it up. But the thing is, you got one-on-one coverage with your All-America candidate, your number one corner, a guy who's had interceptions in exactly that on that route as often as they've been completed against him. You got to trust that he's going to be able to make that play. Particularly since you've already shown you can't cover their slot, so you better have somebody else ready for him. And they played over top of the slot, and with a timeout, they can throw over the middle. They'd already killed Florida State on the prior drive with the tight end, so they came out on the last drive and basically put Derwin James straight over the tight end and said, take him away, which he did. And then you've got a 5'9", 5'10 corner, Levante Taylor, who played a great game, by the way. Again, on the other side, against their best receiver on the wide side, so do you want to leave him one-on-one? What exactly do you do there, right? You don't want to open up the middle of the field, and you can't really give safety help to a vertical on the outside along the sideline, particularly a back shoulder. So that play call, really not a problem. Now, the execution of it, the technique used by McFadden on that was sloppy. And for that, again, you get back to the details and teaching to make sure that you do the technique, that you do that you do your assignment the right way in every detail, which didn't happen there. In that case, the corner has to body that wide receiver even as he turns. You can't allow there to be space like that. But he got a little bit lazy with how he handled that particular scenario and got burned. Never should have happened. But in terms of call, it's an okay call. The execution, though, shows, again, some of the lack of detail that's been a problem and continues to be a problem on the margins. Now, if you want to criticize the calls from earlier in the drive and from the second to last drive when they also scored a touchdown, be my guest. Lots of calls to criticize there. Most notably, the over-dependence on the corner blitz with Tavarius McFadden. Why bring him off the edge in those situations? Why take your best cover guy out of coverage and allow their tight end to get a 30-yard play? Yes, it's an eye violation from Jacob Pugh. But still, why even make that a possibility there once they recognize that the blitz is coming? And also, again, in terms of little details, you got to stop showing your blitzes when they're up there running a freeze call. When they go through the cadence every time in order to check what your defense is and then get their call from the sideline and check into something, you can't show the cat blitz or the Cowboy Blitz, or the Charlie Blitz, whatever you want to call it, whichever version that that actually was, you can't show your corner blitz and then stick with it if they're going to do that. And you can't show it when they're, if you're going to bring it, you can't show it when they're going through the freeze. You have to, if anything, wait until the snap to start coming. Little details. And they did check out of it earlier, and it led to an incompletion where the quarterback almost threw it straight to the corner, ended up throwing it out of bounds, and the receiver never stopped. That's how it should be. But why? Why run those so much? And the other thing is, again, you're not limited to either, you know, some form of blitz featuring a secondary player or a three-man rush. You don't have a choice between the two. You can also let your four-man defensive line get after it and play something like robber, where you got a linebacker spying or something along those lines. There's different stuff that you can do in some of those cases to try to make sure that you keep it simple and you let your athletes win their matchups. They didn't do it. So you can criticize that stuff all you want. I think there's open game. I think it's open season there. There are enough play calls that can be critiqued on that end, on those last two drives, to go after it. I don't think the last call is really all that, you know, I don't think that was a bad call at all. And again, it goes back to, if you're going to critique a play call, again, we've talked about this before on this podcast, if you are going to criticize something, don't do it in hindsight, looking only at what happened on the play. If you're judging your assessment of a play call based on outcome, then you're not really doing it right, because you can only call a play knowing in advance, or knowing you can't call a play knowing in advance. Sorry, it's getting late. You can't call a play knowing in advance what's going to happen. You can only call a play with the information you have when you call the play or call a defense. So you have to, when you assess the quality of the call, you have to assess what is known at the time of the call. What are the probabilities of what has been done before, what they do or whatever. And is this sound based on those things? And then you kind of have to learn how to rule out looking at the outcomes. And generally speaking, my rule for the stuff that I criticize is, if I'm sitting there watching the game itself and I find myself going, what in the world is he, why are they doing that? As the play is starting and I recognize what the defensive call is, where I see the offensive play call, and I'm sitting there before I see the outcome and I'm going, well, what are you doing? Or I say, well, this should be what they do here, and they do the opposite. Then I'll criticize it, because at that point I've got a good sense of, I was already against this before I knew what happened, based on what I know of the defense, based on what I know of tendencies from what I've looked at. Some of the stuff on the last drives, man, like, seriously. Earlier in the game, it was really well called, and you could see that, and they dominated up front, which helped. I thought Jimbo Fisher called a pretty good game offensively. And, you know, the real positives in this game, and Fisher in the post game, you know, tried to, again, he was coaching his team more than he was answering for the fans or media. But, you know, he tried to put a positive spin on things in terms of, you know, well, we grew up a lot today. And it's true. I mean, the positives from this game are that Cam Akers and James Blackman became college football players today. Those guys have been high school football players out there. They were high school football players out there until the second half of this Miami game. And those guys took a step forward to where they're college football players now. Those two earned their stripes. Cam Akers has earned the right at this point to be the feature back for Florida State. He showed today that he could stick his foot in the ground, get the yardage that he needs, and make big plays in the process, and make his big plays the right way and not bounce it every time and run through tackles and traffic and do the things that you expect an elite back to do. He looked like an elite college running back today. So it's, you know, his role can only expand from here. Akers looked terrific in the second half. And James Blackman, from the moment that Jimbo Fisher called a timeout to chew him out after he misread a coverage. Miami ran a quarters look on the side that he threw a slant to, and you can't throw that kind of slant into quarters because the safety sits and will jump that corner, or will jump the slant. If it's too safety, you better know that it's too high, and you know that it's a cover two rather than a quarters. And then even then, you still have to, as a receiver, sit that slant down so that you catch it at about, you know, eight yards, so you never bring the safety into play. Well, he did not make that decision correctly, and very nearly threw an interception. Should have been an interception. Fisher chewed his butt out, and he handled it well, went into the game, and made a very good read and threw a touchdown to Ryan Izzo. And from that time on, from the time he got chewed out in that timeout on, his whole demeanor and the way that he was, where his eyes were going when he dropped back and how quickly he was able to diagnose where he threw the football, all of that changed. Suddenly he was seeing coverages. You could see he was getting his eyes to the proper spots, and he was throwing on time, which he did not do in the first half. He hung his offensive line out to dry multiple times in the first half by not getting rid of the football when you're supposed to. But in the fourth quarter, after he'd had that little come to Jesus moment with Jimbo, suddenly, or come to Jimbo moment, I guess, he suddenly was seeing the field and flashed the potential, the ceiling of what he can be. So those are the positives in this game, is those two guys really played lights out, and they played lights out down the stretch. When the game got tight, those guys stepped up. Some of the older guys, some of the guys on defense that you would expect to be the guys to step up, those guys didn't. And yeah, Derwin locked down the safety there, or locked down the tight end there, but Miami was just able to go away from him. A guy you expect to make the play down the stretch, you expect Tavares McFadden to make that play. You just do. But again, little details that have been allowed to slide in some of these areas come back to bite you when the game is on the margins. And, you know, Florida State has played on the margins far too much the last couple years. I can see it in 2015, that with all the players that they're replacing, with the quarterback situation in 2015, yeah, I get that. That's what happens when you have that kind of rebuild. But, man, you cannot play on the margins all the time and expect to do well. And if you play on the margins all the time and you're a little bit lax with details, you're going to lose. You're going to lose more often than you win on those margins. Florida State had no business losing this game. None. Like I said, Miami didn't cross midfield in the first half. The defense largely dominated the game. Completely dominated the game until the last two drives. Again, Miami averaged 4.7 yards per play, but that was for the whole game. If we're only counting up to the last two drives, Florida State gave up 3.3 yards per play before giving up 9.2 yards per play when the chips were down and when they just needed one stop to close the game out. 9.2 yards per play when it mattered. When all they needed was one more stop in either case, 3.3 before that. There's no reason, if you play all but the last two drives of a game, giving up 3.3 yards per play, and you lose that game, you did some work to squander away a game that you had no business losing. And Florida State's done that now really three times this year. They had no business losing even to Alabama. They were better on offense and defense than Alabama in that opener. But they found a way to lose it with two major faux pas on special teams. And why in the world? One other thing. Well, and they also threw it away against NC State, but I won't even get to that. Why in the world? Again, I talked about this earlier in the year. Why in the world is Keith Gavin back on kickoff returns? And now Gavin hurt, probably out for a while based on how that injury looked to his lower leg. That injury is precisely why I said earlier in the year he shouldn't be back there. Said it more than once. Wide receiver is one of the thinnest positions on the team. Why would you have a wide receiver back there at all when you have an extremely deep backfield of explosive running backs? Why would you not put Kalon LeBourne or Zaquandre White? Now, this game, it couldn't have been Green because he was out. He was sick. Or Amir Rasul, who went in for one kick late. Why not put one of those guys back on kickoff return, or both of, or two of those guys? You got four running backs, three that were available today for kickoff return duty. And if one of those guys goes down, well, you know, we got another one. Got seven quality running backs. We can't use them all, so we might as well use them on kickoff return, right? And why in the world would George Campbell be back there? Same reason. And you want bigger bodies who will run through tackles and so on. How about running backs? Like I said earlier in the year. And again, this is not an outcome. Again, this is a complaint that I have about a lot of analysis that goes on out there where it's outcome-based analysis. Oh, the play call didn't work, so it was the wrong play call. Or, oh, the personnel decision didn't work, so it was the wrong personnel decision. No, these are things that I questioned earlier in the year. And when you question them before the thing happens, and then the thing that you say is the reason that you don't want it to be done that way happens, then you know what? That's analysis. that's actually just calling it, again, with foresight rather than just hindsight bias, which is a big problem in a lot of analysis. This is not hindsight bias. This is saying it's flat out stupid. It's a bad decision to take players from your thinnest group and put them back at kickoff return when you have other players who are just as good of options, if not better, who fulfill all the qualifications necessary for that job, but come from a loaded position. And actually, given the fact that they're supposed to run through tackles and all that all the time anyway, and Rasul is the fastest player on the team, it may just be the best decision to put those guys back there instead of wasting your talent, one of your best wide receivers, one of your most important players in terms of depth, since you don't have any depth at that position. Why give yourself any chance of that happening there? That doesn't make any sense to me. And then, oh, at the end of the game, when Gavin went out for the final kickoff, when they squibbed that down, they replaced Gavin and Campbell. The deep guy was DJ Matthews. All 160 pounds of him. Another wide receiver. Why? Either way, from here on, given that all the season goals are done, the right decision is to play the young guys especially in these kinds of roles, and to focus on teaching and getting the culture changed as it needs to be. You need to get McFadden off a punt return. And yeah, you know what? You may get some guys that are going to drop some punts because they've dropped them in practice. And that's why they're not back there right now. But you know what? You're not going to win a national title, playoff, ACC title, or state title anymore. So you might as well give those guys some chances to actually take those live bullets and maybe see if one of them becomes the punt returner that he needs to be in those live settings. So give DJ Matthews some chances at the punt returner. Give Levante Taylor some opportunities at punt returner. Or Kalon LeBourne, who I was told caught him really well in camp. Give those guys some opportunities there because, frankly, you're not winning anything of consequence at this point. So start to build in that regard. And, you know, as good as Jaquez Patrick is, well, you know, Akers, give him a few extra. And not just Akers, start time to get Rasul and some other guys some additional carries. Some of the young guys on defense, maybe rotate them in a little bit even more than already has been done. Just what you got to do. Well, I've gone plenty long enough for this instant or pretty close to instant reaction podcast. So I'll go ahead and wrap it here. Once again, this podcast is brought to you by Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville. Luis is a trained photographer, videographer. Give him a call. Make sure you get the best possible price for your house. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.